That's what's in it for me, Simon. I like a rebel. Coop, Rob said, why don't you set Glass up on an exercise program? Let's lose a little flab, huh, Simon? Get your shirt tail out of your jocks. I leaned back on my elbows. And lose the pocket protector? Simon pulled the calculator and pens out of his pocket and bobbed his head. Saturday, you need to get some new clothes, Rob said.
These are new.
Where do you get them? Bobster asked. Geeks are us. In fact, Rob continued, let's make a day of it. Clothes, haircut, shoes, the works. You got money for all this? Simon said, as if insulted, I've got a credit card. Bobster snorted. He spends money to dress like this? I don't know, Rob. He could be hopeless. I don't think so. The first bell rang. Rob opened the door and led Simon out, one hand on his shoulder. What do you think, Glass? Simon squared his shoulders and pulled the gap of his shirt over his stomach.
I don't think so either.
And then Simon Glass did something I'd never seen him do. He smiled. Chapter 6. When Rob came to Beavale, I was the stud monkey here. Next thing I knew, I'd lost my girlfriend and my place on top. But for Rob, that wasn't enough. He was one of those guys that wouldn't piss on you if you were on fire. He wasn't happy to have it all. He had to make sure I didn't have anything. Lance Ansley. My first sight of Rob Haynes was the day he entered Beavale last year. He breezed into Ms. Terhune's honors English class, handed over his papers, and took a seat. As he passed my desk, I caught sight of an oversized paperback book resting on top of his lit text, The Duke of Deception by Geoffrey Wolfe. Since most readers in my class considered Grisham, King, and Danielle Steele great literature, I took a second look. We were taking a quiz, so he read. I wondered if this was all for show. After the bell rang, I stood at my desk until Rob passed. Hey, I noticed your book. Rob's look appraised me. It's great. If you haven't read it, give it a try. I liked that. He tested me without insulting my intelligence. I smiled. Read it? Yeah, it's good. Did you read his brother's book? Hey, I could test, too. This boy's life. He nodded, passing the test. This guy had definite potential. Bob was smart, but an engineer in training smart. Coop was strictly hooked on phonics. When do you have lunch? I asked. Rob pulled out a schedule. After 4th. He handed me his schedule. We have government together. Why don't you eat with my buddies and me? Guess they told you this place is a closed campus and we have to eat in the cafeteria. I can introduce you around. I introduced Rob to Coop and Bobster. Rob zeroed in on the right questions and soon he had them spilling their stories. When the bell rang, he stood. If you guys don't have plans, why don't we meet at Biggie's Pizza tonight? You can give me the real deal about Beavale. I don't want to make an ass of myself finding out on my own. Coop, Bob, and I were like most guys. We'd get together and it was the I don't know game. Want to go someplace?
Sure.
Where?
I don't know. Where do you want to go?
I don't care. You decide. It could go on until Alaska melted. Rob had circumvented the routine. He gave us a place and a plan. We were random stars, and he made us a constellation. After classes, I spun by the library. Scrounging the stacks, I caught a glimpse of Rob. I maneuvered my way to the open catwalk until I could see what he was reading. The yearbooks. All the books were opened to the popularity posse pages. Names of the class, faves, homecoming candidates, prom, queen, and king. We were in those pages for different reasons. The big gun was Lance Ansley. He came from oil money and was considered good-looking. He played football and basketball, so he had the jock vote, but he hung with the kickers. Widespread appeal. He'd won every popularity contest since he'd gotten out of diapers. Coop was there because he was a football god. Strong of body and of heart, Coop was too damn nice not to like. Bob was fun and affected females like catnip. Coop and I hung with him because he liked us. I made those yearbook pages by default. My family's wealth and social and political connections could have thrown me into goober territory, except I had even features and good hair. All I had to do was not offend anyone. And I lived in fear that I'd be found out for the fraud I was. I passed off Rob's taking notes of Beavale's who's who as the new guy, making sure he didn't get sucked into the wrong crowd. Slime balls are always the most welcoming. And while it made me admire the guy for taking control of his own destiny, I didn't mention it to Bob and Coop. A couple of weeks later, Rob and I were in advanced bio waiting for Mr. Tannen. He came in toting a cumbersome box dotted with small holes. The box shook and vibrated. Muffled croaks drifted out. Each of us perched on a tall stool at our station. Tall jars with screw-on lids sat on the lab bench in front of us. Diagrams of eviscerated life forms decorated the dingy beige walls. Mr. Tannen slid the box onto his desk. "Noisy little buggers," he groused, wiping his hands. "Hope no one has been snacking. I hate puke in my classroom." He pointed to the dissecting tools. "Slice and dice day, kids." I groaned. I hated this crap. I hated the smell, the attitude, the gory diagrams. You might be wondering why we have live frogs. In regular bio, you get a dead frog preserved in formaldehyde, but that discolors your specimen. Plus, a newly devitalized animal will have nerve and muscular reaction. We'll examine these reactions today. He peered over his horn-rimmed glasses. "I hope there are no faint of hearts or budding anti-vivisectionists in here. This is an elective course. No one will be excused." The frogs croaked. Apparently, they wished to be excused. Tannen hefted the box and wove through the lab stations. Dropping a frog in each open jar, he chatted and made friendly, like some game show host of death. "Mr. Stewart, you look as green as your amphibious amigo." "You do look like crap." Rob slid his frog out of its jar. Sitting on Rob's opened palm, its white throat bulged and its froggy eyes popped. Fat and wet, it sat humped up and tense. "You'll find a tray of cotton balls soaked in chloroform at the end of each table. Get two. Please be sure to use the tongs. Put the cotton balls in the jar with your animal and secure the lid." Rob lifted the frog to eye level. "He reminds me of somebody." The frog gave a rolling grump and sprang from Rob's hand. It hit the table with a splat, then bunched and leaped, long legs trailing. "Catch him, young!" I snagged the frog in mid-leap and returned it to Rob. His chiseled features clouded. He snatched the frog and squeezed until the frog's eyes goggled. He placed his index finger against the pad of his thumb and flicked it, striking the frog on its puffed throat. He made a dull, wet smack. I'll teach you to try and get away. Another sharp flick and another louder smack. I knew Rob was just goofing, but it made my Cheerios curdle. Cut it out, Rob. This isn't serial killer training camp. Mr. Haynes, Tannen appeared at Rob's elbow. Can you stop playing with your specimen? You are to devitalize it, not make a pet. He pinched a dripping cotton ball with the tongs, handed one to Rob and another one to me. My mouth dried, and my tongue felt thick. Swallowing hard, I looked at my frog, which sat unaware, blinking slowly, puffing his milky throat in and out. I licked my parched lips and grasped the tongs tight between my fingers. The cotton ball dribbled in a thin stream down the tongs to my wrist and soaked into my cuff, its rank, cloying, sweet smell making my eyes water. From behind me, Tannen's hand snaked out, grabbed the tongs, and tossed another cotton ball into the jar. He dumped the tongs in the sink, then screwed the lid down tight. Courage, Mr. Stewart. He doesn't feel a thing. The frog jumped wildly against the glass. My breakfast rising, I turned and stared out the window. I heard lids slapping. Mr. Haynes, put your animal in the receptacle and stop horsing around. I turned to see Rob still holding his frog, pressing the sopping cotton ball over its face. The frog's back legs paddled against Rob's arm. Now, Mr. Haynes. Tannen's annoyance flavored the word. And you two be sure to wash your hands thoroughly. This stuff will kill you. Ask the frogs. Rob dropped the frog and the cotton into the jar and capped it. He leaned his arms on the table and rested his chin on his forearms. His face was rapt, engrossed in the frog's slowing movements. I looked out the window again and concentrated on the yellowing leaves and the scudding clouds. I knew the frog was dead when I heard Rob's hushed, exultant whisper. Awesome. My gut roiled at the sight of the glistening muscles and the flayed skin. I prodded where I was told to prod and tasted something sour when the dead frog twitched in response. Afterward, I scrubbed the smell away. Young, you're scrubbing the skin off. I dried my red, raw hands and gathered my books. Let's get the hell out of Dodge. Rob didn't speak until we got to our lockers. I don't think biology is your thing, Young. You need to bail. Right. I'm supposed to take life advice from a sadist. Sadist? Since when? You were torturing that frog. Rob shook his head. You're not a frog, so I think you're safe. Safe. Chapter 7. Of course we wondered why these boys were so suddenly Simon's friends, but we were delighted that Simon was coming out of his shell. He became interested in how he looked. He didn't lock himself up in his room with his computer. He seemed happy. And how could we suspect something like this would happen? That Stewart boy. His father's a doctor and on the school board. His uncle was a state representative. That family has always been respected in this town. Bob's father works for the same firm I do. We didn't know anything about the other boy, Rob, but he was charming and had lovely manners. What could we have done? Diane Glass. I was voted designated driver for Saturday's spree because I had the best car, a slightly used 4x4 Jeep Cherokee, sturdy and sedate enough to please my father and quietly flash enough for me. Bobster and Coop came to my house. We picked up Rob and headed for Simon's. Anybody know where Glass lives? I asked. Rob yelled from the back seat. 627 Timberlake Drive.
Timberlake? Pretty uptown, Bobster said.
Coop spoke up.
His parents are big Dow execs, both of them. Into the status thing. You know, good address, the right cars, two computers, and one kid.
How do you know? Rob asked.
After school, we shot the shit.
He took my notebook home with him.
He needed to start a fire? Bobster asked.
Dunno. He just asked to borrow it.
That was Coop. He'd probably lend his underwear if someone asked him for it.
627 Timberlake Drive was a sprawling one-story house nestled on the lake. Landscaped and manicured, it shouted good architect and stacks of cash.
Not bad, Bobster whistled. This guy's as rich as you are, young.
We tramped up a brick path. The front door was massive and its glass side panels gleamed. Rob rang the bell and the door ripped open.
Had glass been lying in wait?
Hair combed, shirt pocket empty. His pants, khakis, showing a mile of sock, pressed. Simon grinned. Bobster shouldered past Simon.
This place is great.
Come in. Look around if you like, Glass mumbled.
We like, Bobster said.
We entered a marble foyer with a high vaulted ceiling. A huge chandelier glittered overhead. Glass led us to a high-tech kitchen that gleamed with antiseptic whiteness.
What's this way?
Bob pointed to a hall.
That's my wing.
Your wing? Coop asked.
My parents told the architect to design the house so they wouldn't have to hear my music. Their bedroom, study, and library are there, and mine is on this side.
He showed us down a hall lined with abstract paintings. Coop's house would fit in Simon's bedroom. A connecting room held a big-screen TV, a VCR, a DVD, a sound system, and computer paraphernalia that would make the Pentagon jealous. Shelves crammed with books, model rockets, and microscopes filled the walls, and a telescope as big as a howitzer stood in a corner.
I'd put a weight bench in here, Coop said.
You never have to see your parents in this place, I said.
I almost never do see my parents. I spend all of my time on the computer and stuff.
Glass relaxed. He had something we admired. The mood changed when Bobster opened the closet.
This is unbelievable.
We inspected the closet. 5 pairs of navy blue double-knit slacks and 6 or 7 shirts hung there, all white or pale blue.
This is it? Bobster demanded.
Simon ducked his head.
I've got these khakis and this plaid shirt.
He was pointing to the clothes he wore.
My grandmother gave them to me for my birthday.
Rob clapped Simon on the shoulder.
Glass, the clothes rebellion is over.
You gotta dress for success.
That's what we're here for. Renovations.
Major renovations, Bobster muttered, closing the door on the offending sight.
Burn all that crap or bury it.
Simon got his wallet, checked his credit cards, and squeezed the billfold into the back pocket of his straining khakis. We piled in and pointed my Cherokee toward Houston's Galleria. Coop sang along with the radio and imitated static when he couldn't remember the words. Rob and Bobster sat in the back bucket seats while Simon wobbled on the hump between them. They discussed Simon's new look. Coop was a jeans, t-shirt, and athletic shoes guy by the demands of his limited wallet and lifestyle. But Bob dressed. Long and lean, dark and handsome, Bob traded on his looks. He wore linen slacks in summer and soft wool or flannel dress slacks in winter. He made clothes look good, rather than the other way around. Rob and I were middle of the sartorial road.
I think we ought to forget about a fashion statement, Rob said.
Simon swiveled his head toward Rob and opened his mouth.
I think...
Bob interrupted.
Gotta go casual, but not sloppy.
Simon swung toward Bob, opened his mouth again. But Rob spoke.
Semi-prep might do it.
Kinda Eddie Bauer, L.L. Bean, or Banana Republic. Simon gave up and stared straight ahead.
Tees and bags won't work, I said.
Bobster gave a mock shiver.
No way.
Simon's head swiveled as we hashed out his shortcomings and a plan of attack. In 45 minutes, we had ideas and a parking spot.